You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh.
My guest today is Chris Sidbury. Chris is a beautiful actor who I've known since college. We went to the University of Evansville together. She is always looking to stretch herself and get the most out of life, which I really admire. When we recorded this, she had just returned from her third Burning Man, so her voice is a little scratchy from the dust out there. We had a great conversation about balancing creative life, and I got to hear about the Burning Man experience too, which I really didn't know that much about. So thank you, Chris. I also wanted to let all of you know, just give you a little heads up, that I'm going to be joining a podcast network. An opportunity came up to join this new network called Broadway Podcast Network. Should be launching sometime soon. You can go to broadwaypodcastnetwork.com to sign up for their mailing list and you'll be notified. But I'll keep you posted here as well. It should be interesting. They're going to have a lot of other theater-related podcasts, and I'm looking forward to the collaboration. And the cool thing is, down the line, it's going to let me have some little ads on the podcast, which might feel strange at first, but it's going to help me balance my art and commerce Tetris a little bit. So I really appreciate your support. I'll keep you updated. I'm excited about it. And you won't have to change anything about the way you find the podcast or the way you listen. It all should be a seamless transition. Yeah, things have been up and down over here, but I'm very grateful for the things in my life that are moving and changing right now. Have a wonderful week, and I hope you enjoy the 143rd episode of The Compass.
So a couple years ago, I retrained at a Meisner studio, and we all had a movement class, it's called Williamson Technique, mm-hmm. that we kind of became obsessive with, and some of us formed our own movement company afterwards.
Yes, you had told me about this, but I didn't realize it was connected to that training.
Loss is the name of it. Mm-hmm. So just finding other artistic things that have nothing to do with the competitive side. Or like, I'm just doing it for myself.
Right.
For a while, I was in an... Oh, I told you about the drumming group, too.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, just finding, like, other artistic...
It was, like, an all-female drum...
Brazilian drumming group called Batala. Things that can still keep the mind going, but are very separate in a way, has been helpful.
What would... Because everyone has their own definition when I say the dark side.
Yeah.
So... When I bring that up, what is that for you most often?
Oh, wow. I think like the normal thoughts like late, I had like a freak out a couple months, no, like a month ago of imposter syndrome.
Yes.
Like, I am not good enough for this. This is not like, what am I doing? I think I had posted something of a work I had been doing and people were like, oh, the social media component too also like ramps that up. I think more than maybe other actors in the past would have, but
right.
I had posted something and people were like, oh, congratulations. In my mind, I'm like, it's not that big of a deal. It's not that great. It's not that, like, so don't say anything. Like, maybe I should take this down. Like all the things of like, I get in a headspace of like, I can't be proud of that. I don't know.
Right. Or it's not what you wish it was, or, you know, it's a great opportunity and.
I don't know how, that's why I'm trying really hard to focus on gratitude, mm-hmm. like, instead of, like, it's not enough. I get on a bad spiral of, like, okay, well, I did that, so it's over, instead of being happy with, you just book something, be happy about it, instead of, like, always constantly go, what's next, what's next?
I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
Whoever came up with that term, imposter syndrome.
Knew it.
Just right on the nose.
It's so true.
Right on the nose.
Yeah.
I feel it all the time.
Yeah. Like I'm not good enough. I don't know. Which is so, you know, one of my really good friends, she was like, Chris, if you weren't good enough, don't you think someone would have told you by now? You've been in this.
I can talk myself out of that too.
Too. I know. Same, exactly.
They were all just hiding it. They just didn't want to tell me.
They were just being nice.
They were just humoring me all those years. Yeah. I'm And then you just have to come around and be like, no, there's...
Yeah.
It isn't a lie.
Yeah. It's not a lie. I'm also, like, people have worked with you consistently, mm-hmm. or, like, the fates. Have, like, I've had so many fated gigs in life that I feel like at some point you often get steered. Like, things didn't necessarily... My path has not been what I wanted, but I've never been completely knocked off the path, and that mm-hmm. has not been the case when I've gone after other... Like, I have a master's in management with emphasis in marketing that I got... Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then it was, like, helped with several startups, and then was, like, that was not working out for me. And I, like, I kept getting walls, maybe... I mean, I guess I could have pushed through those walls, but in my mind, every time I left acting, someone would pull me back. Mm. And I try to recognize that as that's a sign that that's your path.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
How did you guys start that movement group? And how have you been able to, like, keep it going, not get too distracted by your money jobs and your acting jobs, and to keep that something that's, you know, kind of pure and enjoyable?
Yeah. Well, funny you say that. We haven't done anything in a while because now careers are starting to pull people away from it. We met in Central Park one day, and a friend, Fiamma, who has, like, a good graphic design job, she wanted something mm-hmm. to work on, and she had just read a book and was inspired by how can female artists do more. And we just sat in Central Park and had some ideas, and then used our skills from that, and then ended up having a show at Triskelion Arts that did well enough, so where he entered, the Fringe came back, uh-huh. and we entered in that, and then, like, smaller little gigs, and we were not making a ton of money, but we could get paid, which feels good. Yeah. As, like, people are willing to give money and time to come see us. And then I haven't been involved because I've been booking shows and leaving. And the groove kind of has morphed with different people from the school. So one of the great things is like, if someone wants to work on something, there is a pool of people that have trained similarly in this movement style mm-hmm. That can... jump in when someone can't. And we have our movement teacher, who's an actress, has since moved on from our program, but every Wednesday and Sunday she has movement for everyone. And so you can jump in those classes and retrain with our person who is kind of our mentor. Mm-hmm. So we've stayed in it that way if we can't do it as a performative group.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so great.
It's what,
plus,
yeah.
Plus just the fact that it involves moving your body.
It makes such a difference.
That's, like, the number one thing people tell me, like, on the podcast, is, like, doing something physical, going for a walk, working out. It's, like, that basic thing about getting your heart beating and your breath moving.
Yeah, getting in your body, and, like, to where I even, like, sometimes have weird, I'll know I haven't moved in a while. Like, I'll get weird sensations or something,
like tensions, and
as soon as I, like, do movement stuff, I'm fine. Which is, when I was younger, I never considered myself that much of a physical person, and mm-hmm. I think it's finding, like, just because I don't do, like, American sports does not mean that I'm not athletic, does not mean that I'm not a person that likes physical activity. Mm-hmm. It just means I don't like soccer. Like, yeah, you
know? It is weirdly separate in our society.
Yeah.
I feel like if you're not officially an athlete or officially a dancer, like, social dancing isn't as big a thing in our culture.
Yeah.
It's not, like, something that people embrace in their daily life.
And yeah, totally.
You have to, like, call yourself a physical person, so, instead of just having everybody acknowledge the fact that we're here in our bodies and it's important.
It's so true. It's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's made such a big difference in my life, I think.
Yeah.
Being active.
So I have so many things I want to ask you about.
Okay.
If we can, I guess, go back a little bit
yeah.
first, just to give listeners a little bit of your background. So you're from Tennessee originally.
Yeah, I am.
And we met in college at the University of Evansville. But I wanted to ask, like, how your family takes in your decision to be an artist for your career.
Oh. You know, to be honest, I'm very lucky. My mom just wanted me to go to college no matter what. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, my dad, he's super supportive of me. My dad had this crazy dream that we were going to be concert pianists, which is like, I don't even play the piano, so that's ridiculous. But he like wanted this, I don't know, I think, so my dad grew up in the projects part of his life. Mm-hmm. And both my parents grew up very, very poor. And so his like thought of like making it was this artistic, like, I think he'll be like, well, I saw rich white people do it. Like, that's what I think like he wanted. And they're both physicians now. I'm super proud of my parents. But my dad has had a tough time with, my dad's like the country doctor that like, he can never say no. And my mom also is very giving, but more of the business side. Mm-hmm. And I think my mom really wanted me or one of my cousins.
But you're an only child?
I'm an only child, mm-hmm. Yeah. From my parents' marriage. Ironically, I have a little sister who's going to be an orthopedic surgeon, who's my half-sister. So that feels great.
Good for her.
Yeah, good for her. But yeah, so, but they have really like, my mom just wants me to be able to take care of myself. That's really at the end of the day.
That practical side.
Yeah. Which I get, right? Like, mm-hmm. They both really did come from very meager beginnings. And she sees the hard path. She also is like crazy about wanting a grandchild. Like, so she doesn't understand to wrap her brain around how I can have that life.
Right.
Doing what
it isn't a clear ladder progression some people's are.
Yeah. So it is what it is.
Have you gotten to see a lot of your shows and films and stuff?
My mom comes to the majority of my stuff. My dad, not as much. My dad is a type 1 diabetic, mm-hmm. who is now on dialysis. So unfortunately,
travel. It's
very hard for him to travel. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. But he tries to see. He comes to all the film things or makes a point to do all of that. But theater's hard for him. Yeah. So it's a goal to like, somehow, if anyone's listening, to Nashville is where I'm from. It would be great to come.
Yeah, I'm sure they have a film festival in Nashville.
They do, actually. Yeah. So I just did a short film that's on the festival, trying to get on the festival circuit, but we missed one of the cutoffs for our premiere to get onto that.
Right.
So maybe next year.
And that's such an artistic city. Did you experience that growing up? Or is it just because, at least for the music industry, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so changed now. And it's interesting growing up in Nashville. There was a kind of a rejection. There was a rejection towards country and like music when you were growing up.
Right.
And then appreciation once out of it.
Yeah. I understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think only when I came back from college did I actually, I interned during college at Sony Music, mm-hmm. and got to handle like the old archives. That was a part of my job, which was pretty cool. And then I gained an appreciation for country and like what Nashville had to offer, but before then, not at all. Mm. It's also like a Southern drinking culture and weren't old enough to partake in it. Do you know what I mean?
That social part of the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now it's changed so much I don't recognize it when I go home, which is weird.
Very weird.
Yeah.
I know we were talking about this for a moment before we started recording, but how are you feeling about New York at the moment?
Oh,
I'm always curious how geography affects people as artists, like the vibe. Because you went to grad school in Boston.
I did.
At Harvard.
Yeah.
And I know that like you've had a chance to work extensively in the Boston theater community, since moving back to New York.
Yeah.
What is that like? Are you ever tempted to be based in Boston again, or?
It's interesting. Yeah. So that's another dilemma.
Are you a New Yorker for life?
I don't know. You know, the past 3 to 6 months have been really contemplating moving. I love Boston. I love the intellectualism. Mm-hmm. I like the size of it. It's interesting. Yeah, this conversation I've had a lot lately. For so long, I thought New York was the end-all be-all.
Yeah.
And now that I'm here, it is not. I think, too, New York has changed a lot. And I often say, a lot of what made New York cool is no longer here, or I can't afford it. And for Duane Reed and Starbucks on every corner, I can move to Idaho for that. So... and I have such a strong friend group in Boston.
Hmm.
I'm not quite sure yet. But now I'm starting to kind of make strides. A good friend of our mutual friend, Damien, always I do tend, though, to run back to Boston, which is safe, right? I don't know. I haven't, other than when I retrained, have not spent more than a full year here. And even then, I booked a show in between training. So I often run back there. So I can't decide, is it that I need to really give New York a year staying here? But it's been 8 years. So you'd think you would know if you like something.
If you're getting work. I don't know if I call that running away, but
exactly.
You can know. Is that what Damien was saying?
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. But then I'm also, I do work a lot there, and at what point do you realize, is my goal to work, or is my goal to make it to that level?
Right.
And that's what I'm figuring out. Is it, I'm happy just being a working actor. There, I'll never get to, I want to be series reg, and I want to be on Broadway. That's not necessarily, there are times where shows move.
Mm-hmm.
But there I can be a consistent working actor with no other side jobs.
Right.
Here, that's not necessarily the case for the most part.
Right.
Yeah.
Which sounds very tempting in a lot of ways.
Exactly.
Can we talk a little bit about side jobs?
Oh, please.
Yeah. And how you piece together the quilt of paying all your bills when you're not working.
So I'm very lucky that one of the things I do love about Boston that New York does not offer, there's so much corporate training stuff. This week I'm going to go to Virginia and do,
life. Industrial videos and stuff?
Sort of. I do a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But I also do a lot of, it's interactive live theater, but for corporations.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah. And it pays well, so I do a lot of stuff like that, and industrials. So now I'm almost vested in my pension for the union, and which has been helpful to have a goal like that. So if I have to do calculating am I gonna make it this year? If I have to do background, I'll do it. I've stood in a lot, I stood in for Taraji for a movie. I try to do, it's funny, a lot of people have thoughts about doing stuff like that. In my mind, if it goes to my retirement at this, where I am in my career, I'm going to do it. And also, it keeps me on set.
Right.
And that's all I care about.
Watching and learning. Because
that's a whole nother animal that, unfortunately, in theater school, they do not teach you about, and it is not the same.
Yeah.
And
I was going to ask you about that, what you've learned about, I know you've been doing more film and TV.
Yeah.
What you've learned about that kind of audition process and how you've picked up not your training but your knowledge along the way.
I take a class in Union Square at the Kimball Studio.
Mm-hmm.
And just the technicality of it all, she goes really deep into what your eyes mean, how mm-hmm. to cut down the script, and it's not acting, right? I'm used to using my very visceral and senses, and it's not that. And having to learn to be okay that it is not that.
Yeah.
Not to let the ego go and that that's not whatever. my job is to, I consider like an actor to be a paintbrush. And like sometimes I have to paint the picture differently, right? Using all my skills. And it's just acquiring another skill. So I'm still kind of learning a lot with that one. And learning too, like each casting director room is different. And having to like get in a room enough to learn like what this casting director thinks is correct is right. Not what this one is. And like that's a whole nother game. Then I'm just, it's just different.
And it takes time.
It takes time. And to be okay with that. I struggle with that. I'm a very impatient person in that manner. Like, I want it now. I don't understand why it's not. I'm like, Chris, like, it's a long game. And when we all tell ourselves that, right? Marathon, not a sprint. Marathon, not a sprint. But also, like, dang.
How long is this marathon?
I did not sign up for an ultra marathon. Thank you. So yeah, I'm still learning a lot with that. I learn now too, by being on set, I like film more than I like TV, even though my goal is to book TV enough to where I can make that money and then go do the theater I want and produce the theater that I want.
Well, and TV is having such a boom right now.
It's such a,
The big movie stars are going back to TV now.
Which is crazy that would happen. And the want of kind of, not a 9-to-5, because that's not what TV is, but closer to...
consistency.
Yeah.
If it's something that's ongoing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, great. So that was a tangent.
Sorry,
from the in-between gig.
Gigs, yeah.
Jobs, yeah.
I nanny. I love babies. Mm-hmm. I love being around kids. I think that's something that, like, it's funny when... to harken back to the, to stay creative, like being around like a body that's A, pliable, and like the way they see the world is pretty inspiring. Like, I do love that. Okay, I just got a, well, I guess it's not just, it's almost been a year now. I said I'd never serve again. And then a year ago, I realized like, oh, if I want to move out of my current place, and if I move to LA and want to buy a car, like having a consistent job on applications, like all these adult things matter. So I got a serving job. Ironically, I applied to one of a friend's husband is a GM and I had no idea I was applying to him. So that's been great because they've been wonderful with my schedule because I do leave a lot. For long periods of time, and I always have a job to come back to.
That's great. Just to have that little extra, extra cash.
It's and just trying to like, for a long time I didn't have a side job. When I first started acting in Boston, I was a historical reenactor on the Freedom Trail. That was actually one of my best side gigs ever. I loved that job because it was acting and not and. Mm-hmm. And learning how to, because it's a one-woman show, how to read a crowd very quickly, even more than you learn on stage, right? And then change the script as I'm walking, right? Like, okay, they're teenagers, so I gotta like up the body, but not too much for that I do for an adult crowd, and like, what stories will they like? And like, I realized like, well, I had to really learn how to be a quick performer, and feel, or like, you can't always read faces because sometimes that means they're listening. Like, just because a crowd's not reactive doesn't mean they're bored. Which we filled out on stage too. But yeah, it was a really wonderful side gig. Again, that's one of the things I love about Boston market is that I don't have any of my acting friends there that wait tables. They all do educational theater.
It's such a historic city. Yeah. I'm sure there's a ton of that.
Oh, it's funny. Someone was like, Chris, you sound like you really like Boston. You talk about it a lot. I'm like, I guess so. I guess I do.
So you were telling me that you're going to try LA
yes.
for 3 months this pilot season.
Yeah. I'm going to just go see. Yeah. And Right. It's where, like, do or die time, right? Because I will regret for the rest of my life if I'm making strides and I don't try.
Right.
Yeah.
And maybe now's a good time since you've been getting a lot more credits and
stuff. Yeah. So just give it a whirl and realizing that nothing is permanent. I'm a very permanent thinker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, Chris, you're moving to New York, so that means you're a New Yorker. That doesn't mean anything. I can move somewhere else, and that doesn't mean that I've... This is also like the imposter thing. It doesn't mean that I failed because I moved back somewhere. Like, it just means I tried.
Yeah.
And that's a win in itself.
Yeah.
The try. Yeah.
You had brought up social media earlier.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how you found it useful professionally?
Sure.
Or the drawbacks that come along with it. I mostly use it on the personal side. I do use it some for the podcast, but I haven't really delved into the like public Instagram and all of that. Have you found that? I have friends who do both ways.
Instagram, not necessarily as much because I'm newer-ish to it. Like, I didn't get on the train back when you could get follow. You know what I mean? I will say, from Facebook, work begets work. And my network is strong enough in my Facebook friend group that the more I work, the more people think of me. And ironically, like, it's funny. It's almost like a subconscious thing for them. Like, oh, Chris Sidbury's working. Like, and I have people reach out and I get quite a few gigs, I think, from Facebook. Not necessarily it's the Facebook itself, it's just that
it keeps you in their minds.
Yeah. That's
true.
Yeah. To where now I almost don't. I don't put a lot about my personal life. It's mostly, other than if I have, like, I'm traveling, like, I do enough to where sort of about my life, but it's mostly about my work. Although I've kind of made, which I'm trying to pull away from, my life all about my work, which is a problem.
Like, I think that's so easy to do, especially when you come out of intense training programs the way we did. Like, because at that point in your life, it is all about the work.
It's true.
Yeah. And you're living and breathing it, and you're living on a campus, and just your life is that. And so it's easy, as much as anyone tells you otherwise, it's easy to think that that's how it always should be, or you'll always be that busy, you'll always be that inspired, all your time should always be devoted to it. And it's not really a healthy thing in the end.
Yeah.
Especially when you find out that, oh, the industry isn't always going to feed me the way that those other experiences did.
For sure.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. The last place I trained, which was the Maggie Flanagan studio, that she was like, it's never going to get better. That, like, training is as good as an artist you're going to feel, for the most part, I find. It doesn't get any better than training, which is why I keep chasing it. I love training.
There's just something magical about it, because you're with an ensemble, which isn't the norm anymore in actual theaters and things.
Yeah.
And you're working all the time.
Working all the time. Like, and it's like that dirty, like that's what we love, our movement training. Like, you really like it to be wild and free and feel like an artist. And it's not. That's not how it is. You're 2 weeks of rehearsal and it's about making a product that I love, right? But at the end of the day, like, this is a business, and that it does take some of, it takes some of the fun out of it. There's no, like, if, ands, or but about it. Like, it just makes it, and we all have to make a living of it too.
Yeah.
I love training, but trying to learn to, when I was working in a startup, I was talking to one of the heads of it, and he was like, you got to learn to ride the bicycle with both pedals in life. And I definitely ride the bicycle with only career pedal for the most part. Like, gotta learn to, like, maybe balance it out some. I'm trying harder to do that, I think.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary, and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
Yeah, I say this, I don't know if that's comforting.
Well, you just went back to Burning Man for the third time?
For my third time.
Which is why you got a little bit of the scratchy voice.
Yeah, sorry, that's why I sound like a frog.
But you like just came back last week, so thank you for doing this soon after.
My pleasure.
But that, can you tell me a little bit about that experience? Because that seems like one of those things that you've found and you've held on to as like that other pedal.
Yeah, for sure.
One of those things that really feeds that other side of you.
Yeah. This burn was amazing. I was gifted a ticket this year. So I've been in the community. My first burn was 2012, so a while ago now. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons, it's funny, someone asked me like, oh, why do you keep going? I love the experience. It is insane to think that there are so many people that are seeking tribe and art enough to where they really give, like Burning Man, a lot of people don't understand, it's not Coachella, it doesn't provide anything but infrastructure. All of that art, people can apply to art grants, but for the most part, that's people fundraising and building their entire year to give. Mm-hmm. It's a gifting economy. Burning Man has 10 principles, that's one of my favorites. It's not a bartering system, that's still commerce, is that you give. And to think like there is a beautiful art piece called The Folly this year that was like a 2-3 story tower building.
I think I saw pictures of that.
And each room was done, decorated by a different artist. And the detail and the intricacies that someone would give their time to do that to burn, because that was set on fire. Not every piece of artwork is set on fire, and a lot of it is people will bring it back. But I personally think that that's like so beautiful and inspiring, and it's so neat to see people that are like never thought of themselves as an artist before, and then go out there and then next year bring an art car or like learn engineering and learn welding because they never got the chance to explore their inner artist. And it's funny, like, I don't have a, like, people have, like, what's your playa name? I don't have, like, an alter ego out there because for a living I have alter egos.
Right.
Like, I get to just be me. But and for me, like, people are like, oh, is it life-changing? I'm like, not so much because it's nothing for me to, like, I'm not, like, if you're backstage, like, to be naked or to be, like, free, like, that's not anything for an actor.
Right.
But to see other people do it and, like, get to crack that shell is really great. I do it, too, because, again, I was saying I was gifted a ticket. When I do shows in Boston, I'll have a friend organize. They never tell me what night, but, like, 20 people or more, some of them I don't even know. They're just a part of the community, will come in and support me.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, so like just tribe, I think, is so important. And that's kind of what you find at Burning Man is while there is a party component, and unfortunately the culture is changing, there is still a core group of people who just care about making art, supporting other artists, and tribe, and finding a way, because again, Burning Man is like, it's a social experiment. It's a temporary community that's trying to do things different than what we do in this world and see if it works. And it does work for the most part. For the most part.
Uh-huh.
And I think, and it's so just, it's a way to like gain artistic juice.
Yes.
And ride that wave until the next year, and then
and step out of the norm.
Totally step out of the norm.
Just shake it off.
Yeah,
so, I assume.
If coming back to this world is so crazy, and like having to deal with emails and like, like because out there, like it's, I've been texting a friend, and we spent most of a burn together. Like, you get up, and then like, you have a coffee, and then you watch a dragon drive by and you wave it to the dragon and like a dust storm comes and like you go out into the dust storm and then you find a random spa and then it's all free and then like you know it's and then you're like oh I get a free shot if I get spanked. Okay.
Like, riding the rave.
Yeah. Just, and it like, it's so weird because you have the 2 days of like, you have to decompress from the default world. We call it defaulta, this world. Mm-hmm. And then by like Wednesday, Thursday, you're like, I guess this is my life now. I live in a tent.
It's like that summer camp vibe.
Exactly. Like you just, this is life now. And then unfortunately, then it comes to like everything breaks down and we all burn it down, which does again speak to like life is impermanent and mm-hmm. like you can't hold on to things. Like you made something beautiful, you can't hold on to it and you have to let it go. It's a wonderful and beautiful like mind twist that I'm very happy to be a part of. Yeah.
How large is it? I'm trying to like get
70,000 people. Now,
oh my gosh,
it's huge. It's the third largest city in Nevada when it happens.
Wow.
And it's about 6 miles.
Okay.
Expands. It's grown. It's always in the same. So Burning Man takes place in an ancient alkaline lake bed, and they do rotate it so that it doesn't tear up what's called the playa. Mm-hmm. It's again a leave no trace event. So, I mean, even to like the littlest things, like glitter, if you see it, it's your responsibility as a citizen to pick it up. Mm-hmm. Actually, if anyone's interested, in the New York Times, there's an economist that came out this year, a Nobel Prize winning economist.
I saw that article. I didn't get a chance to read the whole thing, but it looked really interesting.
It's interesting. Like Burning Man now has become such an experiment in society that they're looking at it as a way to combat urbanization for cities as they grow. Because like it's a way for a city to grow without plumbing. It pops up. And how do they take the... It was just crazy. I know like the military studies it and how to create a temporary city.
When was it started? How many years has it been around?
Oh, it's been a while. So it started, I think, 86?
Okay.
I believe.
So a long time.
A long time ago on Baker Beach in San Francisco.
Okay.
And it was very different. It was an anarchist event. Mm-hmm. So they like went out and like shot guns and like would take cars and not like turn the lights on and like just do, it was like a total way of like weird escapism. And unfortunately practices in anarchy don't work because people started to die. And then then they started to make principles and rules. And unfortunately, one of the founders, Larry, died last year. Mm. And so there's these 10 principles, radical participation, gifting, self-reliance, because it is like, again, you have to bring all of your water, food, and shelter out with you and make sure you pack it all back. So... it has now changed, unfortunately. And then in like the late 90s, the raver culture came in because it was more like fire and like this apocalyptic thing. And now it's like raver with a lot of blinky lights, which I hate. I hate the blinky lights. Like, oh. This year I was like, my first day, I was like, I don't know if I can come back because it was like Times Square on crack times 1,000.
Oh my gosh.
Like you... everywhere you
glow sticks for as far as the eye can see.
Like so much like and crazy art cars with lasers that could go miles. Like you it could be like the furthest thing away from you and you could still see it like all the way back. There's the city and then there's Esplanade. So it's just which is like the vast open space versus where people camp. It's so crazy. I mean eventually you acclimate to to the nuts. But when I first started going, there's a lot more fire art. And now it's more LED, which is also a product of fires very expensive and not sustainable. So like as much as I want to hate that it's changed to LED and blinky lights and like raves, it's also that like the culture cannot continue using like a ton of gas to blow stuff up.
Right. So what's your strategy when you go to that? Do you bring any work with you, or are you kind of just looking to see where it takes you and participate in the artwork that other people have brought as like the start of the city? Or
I am a member and help run a camp mm-hmm. called Bring a Pheromone. And it is super silly. We actually won an award this year. We do armpit smelling. So yeah, it's pheromone dating. So we call ourselves scent sommeliers. We have this fun armpit booth that is like in a knot, like you stick your arm out of it. And then we have a sheet, and the sheet is like, has like a rating thing, like acidity, fruitiness. What does it make you think? What would you name this armpit? And then we have an event where we have pheromone dating.
That's
so
hilarious.
It's amazing and fun and super silly. And I was there the very first year of camp, and I hadn't been in a while, so things have changed. They now do ball sacks. Like, I'm not smell any of those. Like, it's just super silly. And like, but for the pheromone dating, we had a couple come up to us, and the booth roams now. Uh-huh. We have this thing called a surrey, which is like a
cart kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That pulls
surrey with the fringe on top from Oklahoma. That's one of the songs.
Oh, I didn't know that. Really? Well, this is like this. And it pulls the booth. And so we can roam around Esplanade.
Oh, fun.
Now, which is really fun. And a couple came up to us this year and said that they had met at our pheromone dating and got married.
Oh my gosh.
So guys, fun. It works.
It works.
Yeah.
There's a science behind this.
So there is like, we didn't this year because the events got kind of messed up, but an education on pheromones. And there is a thing of like, you are more attracted to just making genetic diversity and...
Right.
Birth control can mess up what you are attracted to too, because it messes with your hormones, and
which is so fucked up.
Isn't that crazy? All sorts of like fun little tidbits, but it's just a fun like way to get people to interact in a manner that they normally would not.
And take all those walls down.
Yeah,
all the walls,
girl. Like, because I'm not into gross, but I do it now. So
the right environment.
It's the right environment. And it's like, it's interesting to see people be like, I would never. And then they do it and they love it. They're like, I didn't know I was into armpits. I'm like, yeah.
So this just sounds so amazing. And just like you've found the right thing for you.
Yeah.
Have you, I know you said that sometimes people come see your shows, but like, have you found ways to like, reconnect with that feeling throughout the year or in the years in between when you got to go, either just for yourself or maybe by staying in touch with other people from the community, like ways to harness that energy of like, oh my God, I felt so free at that time, or like whatever. I need to hook back into that energy.
Mostly hanging out with that group of people. They do little things like we'll have a party, and before the party we'll take an hour to go gather trash around the river as like we walk together as a group to the party. And
that's great.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we've lost a lot of our artistic spaces in Boston. So having gatherings or doing whatever isn't as easy as it used to be. And a lot of people have left and moved to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess like when you go through crazy events like that, to be all together, I'm an extroverted introvert, which I think most, it's so funny, everyone's like, oh, you're an actor, they expect you to be introverted.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, you see me when I'm on, because that's my job. In my real life, I'm not extroverted, really. But for that group of people, because it's a lot of like just normal dorks and geeks and social outcasts with them, I feel like I can let loose a little bit. But it's hard. You'll never feel the freedom that you feel at the Burn, right? Because this is still this world. But connecting with, just other artists and people that have chose to live their life differently keeps me going when I, like, go back to Tennessee and I don't have, like, the house and the cars and, like, all the markers of someone of in their 30s should have. Yeah, which right. I know we all feel that. I love the, like, I have friends that live in like weird artist warehouse loft spaces that have totally, my one friend who runs my camp at Burning Man lives in a box truck that they have made into like a tiny mobile home. They're test software and they don't have to be anywhere. And like, I personally, because I grew up, I went to like a private Christian academy, like so what America thinks is right. I love being in non-traditional spaces.
Yeah.
I'll never be the person that lives in a box truck, but knowing that I can do that and make it work means the world to me.
Yeah.
You know,
just having that reminder that you don't have to live
the
norm.
I know there's no rights, no wrongs. It's what works for you.
Yeah.
And seeing the possibilities. I need to surround myself with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any artistic mentors who have been helpful to you throughout your career?
You know, yes, actually. A couple from my training that have been lovely that I can call on. I work with this director a lot called, her name is Summer Williams. I just did my 5th show with her.
Oh, wow.
And Wake It Groom can, yes. And I had to count it and make sure. And we both did our first Equity shows together. And it's funny because when I think of mentor, I think of like, but also, right. But that's like,
it doesn't have to be someone 30 years older than you in a position of power.
Yeah, which is funny that like, I do like buy into that a little bit, but someone that knows my work so well and my crazy that they can direct and talk to me in a way that like gets me where I need to go. Uh-huh. And she's like just a brilliant mind. And like, I just did Schoolgirls, the African Mean Girls play.
I saw it when it was here in New York. So good.
Such a great show.
Yeah.
And the girls that she worked with, some of them had never been on a stage before. Mm. And at the beginning I was like, oh no. And this show, like the response from the community was amazing. And to see like a director be able to, I've never worked with a director like her, and the way that she can like get stuff out of people because she knows how to cast. Like if you do they say like casting's half the problem. Mm-hmm. And she's so good at that, and learning how to talk to people to get what she needs out of them. At the beginning of every rehearsal, we would just talk about our day, because the show is about people in a boarding school, and that's what, right, you would talk about your day. Just those little like genius moves to get the comfort going, and like, and she's just helped me a lot along the way, which is, it's and been a like more than like a mentor, like a friend. And
yeah,
I love Summer. She's been amazing. And she was my first professional gig in Boston too. So it's just been like all the markers of actor's career. She's been with me.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are there any lessons that you've learned in the last couple of years that you're really proud of that you want to share with me? It could be something small. It doesn't have to be big.
Lessons that I've learned. I feel like so many lessons. Well, for one, I was saying riding the bike with both pedals is a big one. Learning. So recently I have been doing this thing. This is maybe like one I'm still trying to learn. Mm-hmm. Where people like ask me what I do for a living, and I'll say I'm an accountant. Just so I don't have to answer any follow-up questions. Like, what is the most non-follow-up thing?
And that's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's and I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, just like because...
Like, depending on who the person is.
Exactly.
It's like sometimes you just don't want to get into
it. Yeah. Because like acting is the only job where people think it's okay to like make me list my resume or prove myself.
Right.
And the lesson
it's uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable. And I'm like... just because, like, I've been in a big project doesn't mean you've seen it anyway. Like, so, and then you kind of, you find yourself, like, going down the list of, like, well, you don't know that one. Do you know this one? I'm like, I don't want to do this right now. So the lesson I'm learning is, like, I don't have to prove myself to anyone.
Yeah.
And I don't, I'm still trying to, be proud of what I do, but then also in a kind way be like, and I don't know how to do that yet. So there's like a lesson I'm learning, right?
Like, it's an important one.
It is an important one, yeah. Like, I don't, and it is, it literally is the only job I feel like we're automatic, like, oh, prove it.
Uh-huh.
Like, or like, how do I combat, like, when people say, like, oh, you must wait tables, and I'm like, for the majority of my career, I have not, there's nothing wrong with it, and, like, why would you?
Yeah, what are we getting into?
Yeah.
It's that whole, and it's something that we each have to struggle with ourselves, too, and society, is, like, yeah. What is the definition of success?
Exactly.
And in those conversations, that's something that's being put on the conversation as well.
Yeah.
By someone else.
How successful. I have to do that with my mom a little bit. She'll be like, well, Chris, they're filming Hallmark movies. Like, she did. I'm like, oh, it's not. That's not what I want. Because, like, that manner of, like, someone needs to know your name.
Yeah.
And to, like, the lesson that, like, Chris, like, I don't need anyone to know my name. I need to, like, just know in my heart I'm artistically fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And hopefully doing it with a paycheck that is sustainable to the life that I want to live. That is it. That's... Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess in the past few years, learning what does that going to look like for me, and being at peace that maybe it doesn't look like my 14-year-old self that chose to be an actor.
Right.
Like, and I think all of us come to that point.
I think it can be hard for actors specifically, since it is, like, a most of the time, a group activity.
Yeah.
So it is hard to feel if you're not doing a project right then. You know, if it's been a while,
yeah.
Am I still an artist if I'm not practicing at the moment? Ugh. And that is something I have to fight letting myself fall into all the time, especially because I'm taking a break right now.
Yeah.
But it's a little different from other art forms.
Absolutely. Oh,
you know,
I had an ex once say to me, this is like kind of heavy. He was like, well, it must be just a hobby. I mean, you don't do it every day. And then getting in my head, I could sit around and read Shakespeare and plays all day, but that doesn't make me, like, that's not what it's about. And being like, you don't get it, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And kind of owning it, like, you know what, I do something so special with my life that you don't get it. And that's, like, I'm proud of that. I have taken a path that, like,
less
traveled. And I've taken, like, again, I had a master's that's completely different, and taken breaks, several breaks, and, like, that's okay too, because at the core of who I am is an actor. Actually, you'll appreciate this. I was so at Burning Man, I was at the spa thing where they gave you mask and like things for hands and your feet, and this really handsome guy, older, sits down next to me, and he was like, oh, yeah, I'm an actor, too. And we start talking. He's like, well, I did 60 episodes of Psych, which is one of my favorite TV shows. And I was like, oh, my God, you're Buzz. And he's to an actor like that. He was like, yeah, I don't know. I'm taking a break. Like, I'm wanting to settle down. And, like, he's like, I'm flipping houses now. He lives in Vancouver, I believe. And to hear that, and I'm like, it doesn't matter what level you're at. And I have friends that are, like, big names. Sometimes you get drained and you want the normal life and you take a break, and that is okay. It's who you are. You can come back to it. It doesn't leave. Skills get rusty, but, like, I'm never not going to be an actor. Even if I quit today and don't act for 20 years or I never act again, I dedicated my life to this art form, I'm still always going to be an actor. I try so hard. Oh, getting emotional. to hold on to that.
Yeah.
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 Doesn't matter. Oh. Sorry, guys.
It's okay. Okay, well, there's just two little questions I usually ask at the end.
Okay.
If you do find yourself in the dark place or like giving in to those feelings, are there any tangible things that you go back to again and again that can help bring you out of it? Like a book you reread or music you listen to or somewhere you go, stuff like that.
To be honest, I talk with my friends. That's, the biggest thing is to, because I tend to cocoon, to check in that like, oh, like you feel this way too? Great. And then I can like kind of talk myself out of the place and movement stuff.
Yeah.
Oftentimes too, when I'm in a dark place, I'll be like, how, when did you last go to the gym?
I need some endorphins.
Yeah. Like that. And it's funny, like how much that just having to like get out of my body. It's the getting in my body and out of my head.
Yeah.
Is probably one of the biggest things for me. That and community, which I guess I didn't realize how important that was until like the past couple of years. Community. Yeah.
And then, is there anything that you've seen recently of any art form that you want to recommend?
Ooh. That's so hard.
I know you've been in a bit of a bubble lately. Yeah. The last couple of months.
You know, I haven't seen a bit of theater in a minute, which is upsetting. I'm trying to think of like a film or... This is a random thing that's coming to mind. I love Ed Harris.
Uh-huh.
I think he's so great. And I watched this movie. It's been a minute. I think it's called Kodachrome or something. It's on Netflix.
I haven't seen it.
He's kind of reconnecting with his son. He wasn't a great father. He became this famous photographer. And the last place that develops Kodachrome or whatever, I think that's what it is, film, is closing down. And they take this trip together. I don't know why that is such a random movie to pop in my head. But I...
It hit you in, the, in a certain way.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like the... like the quirky art that just tells like a simple good story. That's what I gravitate towards.
You know, he's taking over To Kill a Mockingbird on Broadway.
I did know
this. I think
this.
Maybe this month or next month.
Because we have a friend in that show.
Aaron Willamy, yes.
And Gabanga, who plays Tom.
I don't think I know him.
He was in The Wire, but he played my husband in Detroit.
Oh,
and
great.
So I feel like I have so many friends. But I tried to get tickets and was like, whoa. So that was...
Yeah, you gotta see it.
Yeah. I haven't seen a lot of theater. You know what? That often, back to like the question, tangible. I generally, if I go see a show, I feel better. Like, oh, and to see that the audience is big, even for some of the smaller things that I go see. People are still going to theater. It is my art is being supported. Because sometimes I get mired around people that aren't going to see stuff and thinking like, oh, what am I doing? Like, right. No one goes to the theater. And like, that's not true. Well, the little like mind monsters that like get at you, but that does help too.
Well, Chris, thank you.
Yeah.
This was great.
This was awesome.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. If you find these conversations valuable to your life as an artist and would like to support the ongoing production of The Compass, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/thecompasspodcast. Pledges start at as little as $1 a month. You'll get access to bonus content, and anything you can give would be greatly appreciated. Also, if you have a moment, please rate or review in iTunes. Every little bit helps other listeners to find the podcast. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brandon Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.